I was reading the Fin Review today, actually, this morning, before preparing for the, as I was preparing for the program. And it's to do, of all things, with the issue of dying. Now, look, I know it's a bit macabre, but we all get there eventually. And, I mean, these are conversations that people, sensible adults, have with each other and with their children and whatnot at many stages of their life. You know, where you want to end up once you die, how you want to die, where you want to be when you die. These are preferences that people speak of. And the numbers are pretty stark. When I was looking, it seems that the vast majority of people, 70%, want to die at home, in the lounge room, in the, you know, where they know, where they love, the gardens around them. It's familiar, it's comfort, it's you know, it's a sense of family and place. And yet, less than 15% of us actually are able to achieve this. A report by a group called the Violet Initiative, and I'll get to them in just a moment, says that the associated costs add an annual $4 billion burden to the health and aged care system, because instead of dying at home, we're dying in hospitals. And they make the point that in hospital, the focus is on cure, despite the fact that a lot of patients who end up there in their final year don't really want to be cured. There does seem to be a mismatch. I wanted to delve into this, and you might have your own stories here, trying to navigate the system, and sometimes maybe even loved ones' wishes haven't been acknowledged. Melissa Reeder is the CEO of the Violet Initiative. She's on the line. Melissa, good afternoon to you.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on.
The cure-based system, a phrase that I was reading a lot about today, the inference being that if someone is very old, they go into hospital, they may not want to live much longer. They might have something wrong with them. But there's a preference in the system to cure them of their ill rather than to necessarily adhere to their wishes. And so treatment is initiated, even sometimes at odds with the patient's preferences, maybe family override that or something goes on. That comes at a cost to the taxpayer, but it comes at an enormous emotional cost to the individual, doesn't it?
Look, it does. It has very, very significant emotional costs. We're talking about people, families, relationships, memories, and often a whole lot of regret in terms of how this plays out. But we are talking about a really significant economic costs. And I think, you know, you've only got to listen to the media any other day and you're hearing about the crisis in our public health systems. What we are really trying to highlight here is it's not actually about the last days or hours of someone's life. It's actually about a whole life stage.
Yes.
It's the last 12 to 18 months of a person's life, whether they are an elderly, frail person coming to the end of a well-lived life, or there's someone with a terminal or chronic illness. We'll all have to face this, right, as we care for parents and partners and friends and family members and ourselves, and we don't talk about it and we don't plan for it. So really our message is about helping the community at large to have the right conversations and have a proper plan for this life stage so that it can be the best it can be for everybody involved.
Okay, so look, here's the numbers. 70% want to pass away at home, and yet only 15% of people are able to have that happen. Why is that? Is that because we have a built-in system, a preference in the system to whisk people off to hospital instead of perhaps getting the care to them at home and then assessing it rationally and soberly in that environment? Or is there no alternative? We might want this, but you can't get around it.
Look, I think what you've described is one dimension to the problem, but it's no accident that we've called our latest research report Too Little, Too Late. It's because of that lack of conversation, that lack of planning, all of those rushed decisions that, you know, if anybody that's been through this, you know, it's very clear that this happens in a real emotional overwhelm. People are very stressed, both practically and emotionally, as they go through this. So they're not planned or prepared, which means that they often don't even acknowledge that that person is in the last stage of life, which means they don't access the services that they need. So there's wonderful services out in the community. There's, you know, state government packages. There's incredible work of palliative care.
Yes.
But there's a big delta between the overwhelm and the emotion that people are feeling, the level of distress and disorganisation, and then being planned and prepared and ready to access those services. So that's where we're really focusing, helping people with that readiness.
So planning's the key, but not just planning from an individual level, planning also, no doubt, at the governmental level, so that when people want to exercise this as their end-of-life strategy, there are mechanisms in place to make it happen.
Well, that's right. And don't those numbers tell us the story? You know, very sad, very confronting. And we've all been in those hospital environments. We think about how huge and impersonal and intimidating those spaces can be. Think about an elderly, frail person who's coming from home or from residential care, ending up in those environments in the last weeks, days of their lives. One in four of those beds is an elderly, frail person in this life stage. They don't want to be there. Their families don't want them to be there. We really have to do better.
And yet it's the default. I mean, again, we're talking about human beings, and we've all had relatives in this circumstance, but the numbers are numbers. And here's one stat that you've produced. 11% of the federal health budget, 11%, being spent on 1% of the population who do die that year. So,
pretty confronting.
So that's a lot of money. Generally, we're talking about older people here. They're getting treatment, they're getting, who knows, operations, all sorts of things done. And often they don't want that themselves, do they?
Well, that's the key. People aren't having the experience that they want or that they deserve. So what we see when we look at the evidence is that people spend about 33 days in hospital in that last 12 months over about four admissions, and up to 10 of those days are unwanted, unplanned and unnecessary. So that's where we've really got to work together as a community to try and reduce that time spent in hospital and give people the time they want in the settings that they want to be in, surrounded by family, friends and the right services.
I know it's a bit depressing talking about, but we have to talk about these sort of things, not just as families, but as a community to get this right. I know your group have been speaking about, and I quote here, a death-denying culture. What's meant by that?
Look, I think we have an enormous tendency to avoid this subject. We tend to stay in the space of hope and positivity and survivorship, and we understand the reasons for that. You know, we're hardwired as humans to behave that way, but kindness and honesty are not mutually exclusive. You know, we can talk about these stages in life, we can plan for them, and actually so much more is possible if we're able to do that.
I'm speaking with Melissa Reeder here, the CEO of the Violet Initiative. Just before you go, Melissa, we sort of started this conversation, but when it comes to hospitals, for example, and let's say an older person who would much rather probably just be at home and looking at the garden and surrounded by familiar areas and smells and tastes, and they're there because that's sort of the default position, off they go. How frequent is it that they say, look, I don't want this, I don't want that, and yet somehow the system overrules them, or the next of kin or the power of attorney overrules them? Are they stories that you hear a lot of?
Yeah, look, we really do. And again, it's very sad and it's very confronting, but it's very necessary that we talk about this. And I think, you know, residential aged care is a really important part of this conversation as well, because that becomes people's homes. You know, that is the place that they live often, tens and tens of thousands of people each year in residential aged care. That becomes their home environment. So we really need to be talking about and planning for this more and having a sense of what to expect. You know, Steve, we often point to birth. You know, we do birth planning. We agree now that we have to have a level of flexibility in terms of how that plays out. Let's apply that same sense and logic to this life stage so that people have the experience they want and deserve.
It's worthy of speaking about. I'm glad we did. Thank you for your time. Appreciate it, Melissa.
Thank you. Thank you.
Melissa Reeder, the CEO of the Violet Initiative. It's an important issue, a difficult one, but important.